Messi! And there is an historic goal!
This is
not
La Liga Weekly.
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And no Terry DeFellin.
No Terry.
No Terry.
I've got seats.
We've got seats.
Don't tell him. I've got seats this week.
Okay. All right. Usually we stand up. So if we don't sound as dynamic, if we sound a bit more laid back this week, it's because I've gone as far as getting some seats out for us.
Yeah, they're very comfy as well.
Yes. Yeah. You see, but I don't think the dynamism's going to be there, though. So be dynamic, yeah.
I'm on it.
Because Terry's not here, I did think, right, okay, well, let's get someone in. And I thought when we had Tim Capel on the other week, that worked really well, didn't it? You had a great chat with him.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, I'm going to go look through my football Rolodex and see if I can find anyone else. We've never spoken to this guy, but he's been podding for a long time, almost as long as us. But he's had a podcast with Sky, which ended in the summer when they lost the coverage of La Liga. No, it's not Guillaume Balague. It's John Driscoll. Hello, John. Welcome to the Sound of Football.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
John, I have to say, what a week it's been in Spanish football.
But you always say that.
I do always say that. And really, I think every week is a big week in Spanish football, isn't it?
It is at the moment, isn't it?
Well, last week, John, I don't know if you heard or not, but we were recording this on Monday night last week. And of course, that was when England were playing Spain. So we had it on the telly while we were talking about non-league day, weren't we? Well, trying desperately to talk about non-league day with our eyes constantly averting to the screen. We started recording when I think it had just gone to 3-1, hadn't it?
It had, yeah. Yeah, it was quite a contrast considering the subject matter we were going through at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, what a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think of the game then, John?
We draw two big conclusions too quickly in international football, don't we?
Oh, yes.
So I thought England were superb. If they played the whole game again, maybe it would be a very different story. Who knows? You know, the Sterling goal, the third goal for England, was England's last shot. So, but then again, that's understandable because England were three up, at that point. And so it's sort of understandable that they decided to sort of cling on a little bit in the second half. Lessons to be learned for Luis Enrique. Everyone in football is obsessed with this high press nowadays, aren't they? But if you get that wrong, then you're massively vulnerable, aren't you? Because there's space somewhere on the football pitch, isn't there? And so I thought England exploited that pretty well. They had fast guys up front. And if you get pressed in a pretty uncoordinated way, which is what Spain did a couple of times, the ball is there over the top. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, good old-fashioned way through to goal. So it doesn't mean England are now great. It doesn't mean Spain are now rubbish. Otherwise, we'd be changing our minds every month. A bit of a wake-up call for Spain, I think is how we say it. But no one saw it coming. I think football's a crazy game, isn't it? You know, funny enough, I was on American radio that afternoon predicting that Spain would win 2-0. So, you know, there's the so-called experts. What do any of us know about football?
I'm sure they won't have that recorded anywhere, and I'm sure they won't bring it up again in conversation. I suppose if you are quite lazy about results, then you could have looked at the 6-0 that Spain had against Croatia in the Nations League and thought, normal service resumed, right, Jan?
Well, yeah, you could have, but, you know, as John said, it's a brave man to take a judgment based on one game. And I think, yeah, you're right. You've got to take these things as they come and make your decisions across the course of several games, haven't you?
I'm sure the Spanish press are quite level-headed about both results.
You know, I thought it was relatively low-key, the Spanish reaction to the Nations League, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just getting used to the idea a bit. Maybe there was a little bit of a lack of interest in Luis Enrique's Spain. I thought England got quite a nice write-up from the pieces I read. So it's not like it's, you know, Real Madrid, for example, which I know we'll come to shortly. But there wasn't a crazed reaction to it, which obviously in the World Cup you do get, it's a much more extreme reaction. So, you know, I think it's relatively reasonable, at least the pieces I read.
I know I read quite a lot in the English press about Spain's failure at the World Cup, in inverted commas, but I must admit, I thought they didn't actually do that bad. To go out on penalties to the hosts. That's not really that terrible, is it? Or is it terrible because it's Spain and we expect more from them?
It's the reality of international football, isn't it? We draw massive conclusions on a tiny amount of evidence in international football. There is no other way of doing it. Yeah, I love the World Cup. I pay for myself to go and watch it because it's brilliant, because it's exciting. In terms of trying to analyse it, you just can't compare it to a 38-match season where teams have got a chance to adjust, to change, to learn from their mistakes. Spain, I mean, you're absolutely right. Spain played a bit badly in one game and paid a massive price for it in that they got, you know, they got knocked out on penalties. Croatia against Denmark, wasn't it? Could have been knocked out on penalties.
Yeah.
So Croatia go on. We're hailing Croatia as, you know, wow, what a football story, what a brilliant team, et cetera, et cetera. They could have gone out. Spain could have gone through. That's the fine margins. I mean, those fine margins operate in football all the time, but obviously in a league campaign, it's not a catastrophe if you lose one game or you get a goalless draw in one game. That happened to Spain. Effectively, that's what killed them, wasn't it? You know, I happen to think that they were going into that tournament looking superb. I thought, you know, I looked at their qualifying games. They played brilliantly under Lopetegui. Ironically, I thought it was an absolute shambles to sack him on the eve of the tournament. I know they didn't like what he'd done with Real Madrid. I know they didn't like Real Madrid's approach. I can understand all that. I still think that the World Cup is what it's all about in international football. It is a little bit random. You do have to ride your luck in a World Cup. And so it's all about just keeping the guy there, the guy with the plan, the guy who was ready for it, the guy who did all the preparation, the planning. They just needed to keep him. One goal might have made all the difference. But then, as I say, you're talking such fine margins in international football, it almost defies analysis sometimes.
Well, I suppose that's what makes the Nations League so brilliant. Now, Jan, you and I, we've been bigging up the Nations League for how long now?
Well, since it was conceived.
We won't subject John to our Nations League song. but what I found brilliant is the fact that, okay, right, we're playing Croatia again, third time in God knows how many weeks, and it's a vital game now. It's a vital game that now will dictate whether or not we get relegated or whether we win the group.
Yeah, international breaks had become, in my mind, meaningless and an inconvenience, I think, for the players involved and probably for a lot of people involved. And now that's all out of the window. And you're right, to be playing Croatia again in such an important tie, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's great.
I mean, it's no wonder that club coaches hate the Nations League or express a dislike for it, because obviously they know their players are going to go out there. And, you know, once you put players on a pitch and tell them there's something to play for, they're not going to hold back, are they?
No, not at all. And what's interesting, I've noticed, is the lack of players withdrawing from international fixtures in the international break. As I think people are going to stop calling it because it's a Nations League break, isn't it?
The interlull, as they used to call it. I still think a lot of people who are very, very club-focused will still think, ooh, no, Nations League, but... What about you, John? Are you a Nations League fan, or are you yet to be convinced by it?
No, I like it. I think it's a great idea. I had a similar idea previously. I always thought that there should be some tournament for the lower teams in international football. Otherwise, the whole thing is entirely pointless, which is the reality of international football, isn't it? When you're placed in a group, say Gibraltar, who won a couple of games and look what it meant to them, and it gave some relevance to the whole thing. Whereas previously, you put in a group and I don't know what the motivation is. So they go into games hoping not to be beaten 5-0 by Germany or somebody. And you say, well, that's not what football is. Surely the whole point of football is that you look at the game and you think either of these teams could win it. So, you know, that's surely where you've got to have a starting point, isn't it? So I think when we start on the qualifiers and we start getting the mismatches, I think we will look back and think, actually, you know what, that Nations League was really good. It takes a bit of getting used to because of the complicated nature of the tournament and because we haven't had it before.
Yeah.
But I think it's so much better than utterly meaningless games. Funnily enough, I did an under-21 match. It was Germany against Ireland. Germany had already qualified. Ireland couldn't qualify. Germany weren't much better, and it's like watching paint dry. It really is hard going when you know that there's just it's pointless. And so I have some sympathy with Klopp. I think as ever, he articulated it very well. He said the Nations League is a good idea. It's a good thing, but there is only so much football that the players can play. I understand that argument. I've got little sympathy as a fan of a small to medium sized club. I think, well, you're monopolising, you've got all the money, you're monopolising all the good players, the big clubs. Yeah. So get on with it. you know, put some of your £50 million signings who are sitting on the bench onto your pitch every now and again, and then they wouldn't be as tired. So, you know, I haven't got that much sympathy for the big clubs.
I wonder if Jürgen's going to be saying that when he's eventually Germany manager. I think you might find his tune will change somewhat.
I don't know.
Do you think that could happen? Do you think?
Yeah. Why not?
John, what do you think? Do you think he could be tempted away from Liverpool at the moment? Or do you think he's still got a job to do there?
He's not a bad shout for the future, as you know. You could see him doing that kind of thing. He's going to be around for a long time, Klopp. You know, he's a terrific manager and a great personality. So, you know, he'll be around for a long time. But Liverpool is still going well up there. He's there for the foreseeable.
I think we'll draw a veil over the Nations League for the moment. The one thing I did want to say, John, was the game against Croatia was a bit strange because obviously there was no crowd there. Now, as a commentator, would you have found that very strange to commentate on? Or is it just like, well, hey, it'd be just like commentating on an under-21 game?
No, it's very hard. I did one for Sky recently, actually. Ukraine were playing behind closed doors for similar reasons, bad fan behaviour. And it's just very hard. As a TV commentator, you don't have this luxury on radio. You can, obviously, when there's a good crowd noise, you can just let it breathe a little bit and let people just watch the action, which I think people like. It'd be interesting to get the views, or your views, and the views of the people who listen as well. But I think generally people like TV commentators to shut up from time to time and just let us watch the football every now and again, and then, you know, come back in after a little lull. But when it's utterly silent, you find it's very hard just to leave that, and you can hear the ball being kicked and the players shouting and all of this. So yeah, it's very hard to maintain the kind of energy levels. So yeah, so you know, it's the same for commentators as it is for players in that respect. I think it's a bizarre punishment. I think, you know, by all means, you know, they've got to be punished, but you're almost punishing the away team as well. Which I don't get. There must be better ways. And so points deductions, massive fines, I think that kind of thing would be better. Especially, you know, again, from a selfish TV point of view, they demand a lot of money from TV companies to buy the rights to games. And then it's not as good an occasion. It really isn't. And people will turn off far earlier because there's no crowd, because you need the crowd. You know, it's something that football needs to remember. As TV is handing over all these millions and billions in TV rights, they've got to make sure that that reflects through and into the ticket prices, and that fans are still able to come into the grounds. So, you know, that's a slightly wider issue. I think it's a wrong punishment to be closing grounds. And, you know, part of the deal of having it on TV is that the crowd's part of the occasion.
It's interesting because last year, going on to a subject that you are very well versed in, La Liga, there were clubs that were fined for not filling their stadiums. I think there was
The plan was that they were supposed to seat them where the TV can pick it up. And I agree with that, because there were lots of times where there were fans in a stadium, but they were over on the near side where the camera is, so you couldn't see people. Now, the weird thing about lots of Spanish stadiums, and there's a lot of room for improvement on the Spanish stadium front, is that the covers, the roof, was obviously in certain areas. And when the weather's not very good, obviously everyone congregates under the roof. So that's fair enough. You know, the stadium do need improving, and they need to make sure that they get more people in the stadium. Now, I understand that the football culture is different. I haven't been a fan in Spain. You know, obviously, you know, I grew up in England watching football in England, and there is a different fan culture. But then, having said that, when I was a kid, grounds weren't full because we saw the hooliganism in those days, which put people off. That's not the massive issue in Spain. I think there's just a bit of a disregard for the issue of getting fans in. Not every club, you know, Betis does a brilliant job. It's usually full, the great atmosphere.
Yeah.
Real Sociedad, you know, just redone the stadium, haven't they? And now it looks so much better than it has done for years and years at Anoeta, with the massive running track and the fans off in the distance somewhere. So it can be done, and it needs to be done. And there will come a point at which TV companies will be saying, listen, we're not going to give you the same amount of money unless you are going to use some of that money to make sure that the stadiums are good and that the fans are actually in there providing us with part of the spectacle.
Yeah, I mean, that is so important though, isn't it? Yeah, because it did show with the Croatia game that obviously the fans have got to be there. Now, whether or not it gets to a stage where the fans are there just basically as studio audience and bust in just to fill it up, that's probably taking a bit too far, but
maybe not.
Yeah,
I mean, there's. I read something the other day that something like maybe a dozen, but Premier League clubs could have made all the money they made already. You could have quite easily made the profit they made without even selling a single ticket to the match days.
Yeah.
So you're right. It could easily. You could actually probably handpick your crowd.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, there are. There's quite a lot of clubs, especially in Europe. It happened before. It happened over here where they started making more money from other income streams other than the match day. And now, for a lot of teams, it's less than 10% of their revenue.
Which is tiny, really, isn't
it? Yeah, so you can probably see why this... Well, why put all the investment in our stands when we're actually want to get more money from, I don't know, overseas merchandise or something like that. Do you see that in Spanish football? Do you think that they're concentrating too much on getting money from other directions rather than concentrating on filling up the decent grounds?
Yeah, very clearly, yeah. I think the focus is on squeezing every last penny out of the TV rights is their major concern. And I don't think it should be. As I say, I don't have the cultural understanding of exactly how fan culture works in Spain, because I've only ever done it sort of professionally and then, you know, as an adult, so gone over and seen games. But, you know, I still think that it should be, there needs to be a different emphasis in Spanish football to make sure that every ground is as full as the better ones.
Now, it's great to hear you back on a podcast, because you were on the Sky's La Liga podcast for how many years did that podcast?
I can't remember, about 6 or 7 years I think we did that for.
Wow, so almost as long as us, actually. That's,
yeah, it's catching up there.
But you're still going.
We are still going, yes. Yeah, no matter how hard they try. we batten the door up, they can't stop us. Because Sky lost the rights to 11 Sport, and 11 Sport, they've just started up, so they've not got the whole thing going yet to get a podcast going, which they really should. That's an easy win for them. Do you find now that you don't have to concentrate so much on La Liga that you're looking out a bit more, or is La Liga so interesting this season that you just get pulled back into it?
Yeah, it's a fair question. And to be honest, I've not watched as much as I did. It would be very hard to watch as much as I did, because I literally used to watch every game. In that, not obviously not for the full 90 minutes, but because obviously when it was on Sky, you could Sky Plus it. And so you could watch everything on the fast forward. Because I also, if you ever saw, we used to do La Liga Laughs as well, which was this sort of minute and a half roundup. So I used to sort of scour through for anything unusual or funny that had happened as well. And then I would also just rattle through every single game to get the formations, to see what they were doing, anything unusual and all of that. So I made a point of watching all of that. Now, with 11, it works differently. So I'm doing some of the Italian football for them. I've done a little bit. You know, I've done a little bit of work for TalkSport. I've done some stuff for UEFA. So I'm spread a lot. You know, I've spread myself a lot thinner this year than literally. Obviously, with Sky, you know, there was a lot of La Liga football, and so we could do that virtually as a full time job with, you know, a couple of games on the weekend and then a podcast. And you know, and then midweek rounds and stuff. So there was a lot of work at Sky, basically. I'm freelance, always have been. And so post La Liga disappearing off Sky, I've had to spread myself around. I know who's top of the league in Azerbaijan, and you know, been watching a bit of championship football. I'm doing a championship match tomorrow night on the red button on Sky, Birmingham Reading. So, you know, it's been an interesting challenge, because I love La Liga, but I was just watching La Liga almost exclusively for a long time. Terry and I would still love to do the podcast. You know, we still talk. I miss seeing him as much as I used to see him, you know, because we used to have a good old chat, you know, not just about Spanish football, but everything, you know, when we were sitting around waiting to go. You know, we've said to 11 that we'd happily do a podcast. Their chief priority at the moment is trying to find TV channels to put their products onto, because at the moment, obviously, you're watching it through a device, or you can Chromecast it onto your telly or something, but they would like it to be on the major, you know, TV channel networks. Sure. So that's their priority. So, you know, lots of people ask, it's lovely when people ask, but as you made a point, Graham, it's mention it to 11. get them to put it a bit higher up their list.
Yeah,
because we're keen to go and keen to get back on with it.
Listeners, there you go. Get in touch with 11 Sport. Don't ask John when the podcast's coming back. Ask 11 Sport, because that's the way it's going to come on. But hey, if you were to go rogue, John, you'd probably get help from the podcast community as well. I think the podcast community can stand another podcast, can't it?
I think so. I think there's always room for one.
Yeah, there's always room for one more. There's only about 400 at the moment.
Not too many.
Right, well, let's have a talk about La Liga, because it's been a fascinating start, hasn't it? It's so close at the moment. Well, we've got Barcelona at the top, okay, but only just. And you've got Real Madrid, who are, what, 4 points behind them at the moment? And they lost this weekend to Levante. Did I say that right?
Yeah, that'll do.
Now, Levante, who are currently the best team in Valencia, aren't they?
Yes, they are, aren't they? Good, because Valencia are doing so poorly, aren't they? I think it's a 3-point gap between Levante and Valencia. It's an extraordinary season, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know it's only 9 games in, but 9 games in, you've often got a picture. I suppose if you said, look, 9 games in, Barcelona will be top, you might say, yeah, fair enough. And who else is in the right place? Sevilla probably in the right place at fourth. Real Sociedad, Getafe, mid-table, Eibar, Celta Vigo, probably all in the right place. But there are lots of teams who aren't in the right place at the moment as well. Huesca bottom, aren't they? And Rayo Vallecano and Leganés. So I suppose if you said, if you said at the end of the season, Barcelona would win it and bottom three currently would be the bottom three that go down, that wouldn't be an outrageous claim. Everything else is mixed up. Real Madrid is the obvious anomaly, isn't it? With only 14 points, only 13 goals scored, which is incredible. Because one thing that they have always done, the one minimum requirement as Real Madrid, is that they bang goals in. They have the odd inconsistent start. They have the odd spell where you think they're not as good as I thought they were last week. But it's a weirdly open season. I suppose you'd say Atletico have missed the trick by, not being top of the league, given that Barcelona have dropped points that you wouldn't have expected them to drop. I would not have guessed if you'd given me 50 guesses that Espanyol would be second. And I suppose if you gave me 20 guesses, I'd have got there eventually. But I didn't pick that at all, how dreadful they were last season. Funnily, Alaves were so much improved last season after Abelardo came in. You'd have guessed on their resources they wouldn't have been able to carry it on, but at least based on how they were playing last season, it makes more sense that they are where they are. They're third, aren't they, and behind Espanyol. But Espanyol have done remarkably well. Valladolid, I haven't seen as much of them. Very, very difficult to beat, it would seem. A really solid team, a win on Sunday night again at Betis. There's all sorts of stories all over the place. Teams in the wrong place. It's just, other than Barcelona being at the top, it's like everything else has been chucked up in the air and just seen where it's landed, which is great, fantastic. Well, how long it'll last, we'll see.
Well, it does make for interesting viewing, doesn't it? I mean, because I was looking at the table earlier and I saw, all right, Barcelona at the top. If you compare Barcelona after 9 games to, say, the Premier League after 9 games, you've got the top five.
Yeah.
Barcelona would be sixth. And Real would be below Man United. So that's how compressed the middle and the top of the table is in Spain at the moment. Obviously, it only takes a couple of results for Barcelona to hit the straps. But then again, Messi's injury. Now, that's another spanner in the works, isn't it?
It is, because I think it's fair to say, do you think, John, that Barca didn't really come out flying out the blocks, did they? They started to pick up form when they beat Spurs. And Messi was really starting to turn it on, and then now he's gone and injured himself, and he's out for his first El Clasico since 2000, well, whenever. And he's going to be out of the Champions League games against Milan as well. So that's going to be a big loss.
Yeah. I mean, that's an understatement, isn't it? Messi, it's been a loss to any team ever in the history of football. There are lots of Barca fans who don't like Valverde. Gets a lot of stick, doesn't he? Even though they won the league last season, people think that, and mainly Barca fans, I think that he's made the team dull, that it isn't the Barca way, that he's in some way betraying some of the history of the club, that the slightly pragmatic way that he's set up. I think it's harsh. I think your base requirement as a manager of Barcelona is that you win the league or the European Cup or Champions League. I think he did that. So I think it's a tick. It's a massive blow losing Lionel Messi. We know it'll come one day. So we'll have a little taste. He's had bits of injury before, hasn't he? You know, and he's a pretty robust character, isn't he? You know, he's bounced back and he looks after himself. But yeah, we'll find out a lot more about them, which, you know, I suppose you'd say keeps it open, you know, because the danger is for La Liga, the danger for all big leagues at the moment, because if you allow a situation where a small number of clubs dominate financially, which you get in all the big leagues, that the danger is that it doesn't take many clubs to have a bad season and there's no title race. You know, in Spain, you could say Real Madrid and Atletico have a bad start to the season and Barca start well, then we're struggling to sell a title race. Massive danger in Italy of that already, isn't there? With Juve so much stronger than everybody else.
Yeah, and for France, it's been that way for a long time.
Yeah, France is the most, you know, it's the most extreme case of it, isn't it? At the moment in Germany, everyone's delighted that Bayern Munich have started poorly because it just creates the idea that there's a title race, that, you know, that there's something going on. And so it's important, you know, and it's harsh on Messi, obviously. You know, it might be the best footballer there's ever been. Love watching the guy. I think he's a magnificent example, but quite handy in a way for La Liga that you know, it's going to just hold Barca back a little bit and stop Barca running away. I mean, you'd obviously have to make Barca favourites, wouldn't you, for La Liga? I know they're only 4 points ahead of Real Madrid. I know they're only 2 points ahead of Atletico, but Barca are favourites, even without Messi. And, you know, to be honest, all of those World Cup players could probably do with a mid-season mini-break at some point.
Let's talk about Real Madrid then. The experts are predicting that Lopetegui's days are numbered. Now, you've been following La Liga for many, many years. How much patience do you think Real Madrid will have with him?
Not a vast amount. I think the stories are coming out in various sources, aren't they, that his days are numbered, which suggests that there are people who know, who are connected to Florentino Perez, who are floating it out there. I think is that the way they work? I think it is.
Yeah.
and so Solari or Santi, who used to come into Sky funnily enough and do a little bit with us, he is the Castilla team, the B team. He would be the obvious stopgap who would come in. Conte's out of a job. Don't see that he is a Real Madrid-style manager. And so it would be a strange move from Florentino Perez. It's not to say it wouldn't happen. Wenger's obviously hanging around, doing interviews the other day, saying he's, you know, keen to get back in. Be an easy appointment. You know, he's got a name, he's got a pedigree, you know, so it makes, you know, they went for him many years in the past. His days are numbered. Yeah, he's got to turn it around. You know, I mean, football being what it is, they could win the Clásico and it could take off. My view on managerial sackings is that I think 9 out of 10 would be a rough guess. Sackings come too early. I think clubs, they get emotional about it. They think that the easy solution is to sack a coach and it stops and it gets everyone off their tail, gets fans, you know, from giving them a hard time. And so the temptation is to always sack. Lopetegui is a very easy target at the moment. The football's not great. They're quite hard to watch. They're not scoring very many goals. You wouldn't think it was an outrage if they were to sack him. So, you know, he's definitely up against it. He needs something radical and he needs it very, very quickly indeed. Are there other problems at Real Madrid? Yes, there are. You know, they finished, was it 17 points behind Barca last season? I know they've won the Champions League 3 seasons in a row. But I think even the most ardent Real Madrid fan would tell you that they rode their luck in some spectacular fashion along that, you know, that 3-season run along the way. And they haven't collected enough points really over the seasons in La Liga. They've been too easily beaten by Barcelona too many times in Florentino Perez's time. So there's a lot of work to do. I know they've got some good young players, but the squad does need some work on it. There are areas in which they need to strengthen, particularly strong characters. One or two players getting old and not being replaced. And then the obvious one is that they had the most efficient goal scorer in the history of football. They sold him, didn't replace him.
Most efficient? Most inefficient, isn't he? Isn't he got the worst shots per goal ratio? I think I seem to remember.
Cristiano Ronaldo?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think he's, you know, in terms of
goals, the
400 goals, I think, I would offer in evidence.
Yeah, he did pass that milestone this week, didn't he?
Yes, and the one touch, I know he shoots a lot, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Because someone has to. It's like, and someone should tell Lopetegui that as well. It's like, all well and good, mate, but at some point someone has got to shoot in order for you to win this football match.
I suppose that's the thing, because I remember seeing the numbers for it, and I think the season, I think 2015, when he scored 45 goals or something like that in the Liga, and I think he was having a shot then every 10 minutes he was on the pitch.
Yeah. Wow. That's fine. I really don't mind that. You know, there are ways of losing the football. There are ways of ruining attacks, and there are some players where he has a shot and you think, oh no, no, you know, not you. That was ridiculous. You were just throwing an attack away. But the fact that he scored so many just gave them a focal point. I know he sort of contributed. I understand why they sold him. You know, they offered an eye-watering amount of money for a guy who was 33, whose general all-round contribution had declined. But you still need a guy who's going to stick the ball in the back of the net. And they've undoubtedly missed him. And the goals for column is very much in his favour. It's telling exactly what he provided for them over the years.
What do you think the thought process was of not replacing someone like Ronaldo?
I honestly don't know. It's a bizarre one. I think it's a bad time to buy. I don't understand the real details of their finances. But it's Real Madrid. They're bringing lots of money in. They've signed a relatively young squad. I don't think they're massively overstocked. You know, there are clubs in the Championship with more players than Real Madrid have got.
Yeah.
So I find it bizarre. I mean, maybe there wasn't the outstanding individual out there. But yeah, I think it's such an obvious gap. I suppose, if you now say, so which player, I'm not sure I could name one for you. So maybe that's what Florentino Perez did. Maybe he took the money for Ronaldo because it was there and he thought it was a good deal. And he thought, give me a little bit of time and we'll go and spend it on the right man.
Well, John, it's been absolutely amazing having you on the show. And we would love to have you back at some point as well, because we've loved this chat about Spanish football. Well, we just love talking about football anyway. And I hope you've enjoyed coming on the show as well.
Yeah, no, it's been good talking to you, fellas. Yeah, give me a call another time and, yeah, we'll have another chat.
Great. And I really hope that 11 Sport pull their fingers out and we see your La Liga podcast coming back for download at some point soon.
Yeah, well, we're keen to go. So, yes, everyone make sure you keep watching your Spanish footballs. 11 Sports is there. I think it's pretty cheap, actually. So, you know, dive in, make sure you keep watching it.
John Driscoll, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Now, if you do want to get yourself into some Spanish football this weekend, well, you couldn't really pick a much better weekend than the one coming up, because you've got Barcelona-Real Madrid on Sunday afternoon. That will be a great game, won't it, Ian?
Oh, well, absolutely. Absolutely.
Just for all the things that we've been speaking about for the last half an hour.
And I think the fact that there's no Messi and no Ronaldo in this for the first time actually is not important. Who would have thought that?
But that will definitely be in our box set this week, along with six other games. Of course, you know the score by now. Get yourself along to tinyletter.com/soundoffootball if you want to listen to our lovely hot takes. But Jan, before we came in, it was the FA Cup draw. Sunderland have got Port Vale.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. You've got first round FA Cup. Come on, you've got to be into that.
Well, yeah, I'm into everything about being in the lower leagues at the moment. Yeah, loving it. Absolutely loving it.
Well, so, you might like this one, because do you know the last time you played Port Vale in the FA Cup?
Did we win it in 1973?
No, we didn't.
No,
but
I
you did
know
get
that.
To the final.
Oh, is it 92?
It was indeed.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, as a third tier team, getting to the FA Cup final would be a first, probably.
Well, yeah, but if you take it back, so if you just count the number of rounds, so that was starting in the third round, getting to the final. So maybe this is like starting in the first round and getting to the quarter final.
Well, that'd be all right, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Distraction, though.
Distraction.
I'd rather win.
How are you balancing that then? Are you thinking, you know,
it can go.
It can do one.
They can chuck it in a hedge for some dog to find. Yeah. The World Cup. So
give it the old Spanish archer. Yeah.
Not interested.
Yeah.
Not interested. No, I think we're doing really well in League One, and I think anything that distracts us from that would be most unwelcome.
Yeah, go for the promotion, get
it's
yourself
just
back
promotion.
In the
chat. Yeah. That's all that matters.
Yeah, so you don't have to go in the first round of the FA Cup next year. Okay, well, that's all we have time for this week. So a big thanks to John for coming along and stepping in for Terry. But for now, from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, at Sound of Football, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
We'll do the start off, yeah?
Yeah.
You don't have to wear those if you don't want to.
I'll put them on.